Glad to have you with us for this Thursday edition of Main Street. I'm Eric Dethridge filling in for Craig Blumenschein, and we have got a great show for you today, if I do say so myself. Celebrating a decade of nurturing bodies and tackling food insecurity in the FM area is Heart and Soul Community Cafe. They're going to mark their impressive milestone with a big celebration tomorrow. We'll talk with Leola Dahl, Heart and Soul's founder. Plus, acclaimed Twin Cities singer-songwriter Mason Jennings will be in Fargo for a couple of shows on Sunday. Tom Brousseau has a preview. But first, North Dakota's capital city is marking a very special occasion.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M.
Well, June is Pride Month. Happy Pride. And this weekend, it's being celebrated in North Dakota's capital city. And Capital City Pride gets underway tomorrow and runs through Sunday. And joining me to talk about it is Jay Stewart and Aaron Pringle, president and past president, respectively, of Dakota Outright, which is organizing this weekend's festivities. Jay and Aaron, welcome to Main Street. Happy Pride to you.
Hey, happy Pride. Thanks for having us.
Dakota Outright, tell us about your organization, trace back your roots, how you all came to be.
It's a long lineage. No, Dakota Outright was the 2004 is like when it became Dakota Outright. And it used to be called
Dakota Good Friends. It was, in the early 1990s, it was Dakota Good Friends, and then transitioned to Dakota Outright in the early aughts, or mid-aughts, I guess.
Yeah, in 2004 was it officially became Dakota Outright.
We are on radio, but if the audience can kind of picture a standing profile of a bison with a bunch of stripes, some of them rainbow colors, as you would expect, some not. That's the symbol for Dakota Outright on your website. So describe what the colors are and what they represent.
The idea behind it was the buffalo is North Dakota. It's South Dakota. It is a representation of who, like, North Dakota is. So for that, it is, of course, you have your pride flag. And then behind that, you have your black stripes, your brown stripe, and then we wanted to incorporate everybody. So we have our trans colors. We actually even have our intersex colors as well. It had a slight update just earlier this month to include the black and the white colors into the logo. As before, it was the actual like font was black and then the logo behind it was white. And somebody's like, if you have to explain it, then you probably should have it in the logo. The idea behind it is to have a buffalo for the state of North Dakota to represent who we are as a state. I think the iconic buffalo was the one that won out because when you think of North Dakota, you think of bison.
The colors, though, in the logo represent the pride flag. Also, it represents or at least reflects the inclusion flag, which includes the black and brown for people of color and also highlights the trans flag. Because a lot of times in our community, the members of our community of color or our trans family, we need to uplift them because a lot of times they're the ones that are a marginalized community within a marginalized community. They also are dealing with levels of oppression that we don't, as like the cisgender white community, don't deal with. And so having that and recognizing that as a part of the logo and the flag is important.
So you guys are alluding to this a little bit here, but who are the people in Central North Dakota that you are advocating for? And I guess I should ask, too, because I see this on your website, for those that don't know, and you mentioned marginalized people within marginalized communities. What is LGBTQIA2S+?
Some of us, we call it the Libitqua, so it's easier sometimes, or some very bougie way to say it. But so obviously you have your lesbians, your gays, so your LGBT. Your bisexuals, your transsexuals, your intersex, your two-spirit is your 2S. And LGBTQIA, queer, is a, I actually don't know how old you are, but from what I'm gauging, you're probably in your 40s.
Thank you.
So from that, we always said is, you know, in youth, it was always like, oh, you know, don't be this. And here, as of late, in the late 2000s, I think, is where we really took back that term of queer. And I know personally for myself, that's where the Q comes from, is queer. So not everybody identifies as maybe a gay person or a transsexual or bisexual or whomever they might fall under that umbrella. Mm-hmm. But queer is just like a good gender neutral term, and be like, hey, this is where I identify. I don't like any of these terms, but queer, it resonates with me. Mm-hmm. So for like me personally, as a cisgender white man, I'm 6 foot. I have long hair. I have a beard. I love camo. I was in the military, and I also like to wear high heels and nail paint and do makeup. Some days I want to wear it. Some days I don't. Some days I look like a complete and utter troll, but other days I put on some makeup and you're just like, wow, you look great.
It's like, and you look so good. Like, Jay's nails are like always on point. Like every time I see Jay, I'm like just blown away. Anyway.
So pretty nails and combat boots, right?
Pretty nails and combat boots.
A couple other terms for the LGBT label or LGBTQIA, two spirit plus. Transgender is in there. Questioning is sometimes included in the Q for people that aren't quite sure where they fall or if they fall. And the plus is just to kind of, is kind of almost, and I hate to say this, a catch-all for the people that don't feel like any of the other letters or labels kind of fit them. So it's a way to include people in the umbrella, even if they don't know where they're at or what they're, how they want to define themselves.
Yeah, I like that questioning thing because, you know, it all speaks to some of the things that I think about, you know, in being in public radio. When I hear a story on public radio about a queer or a trans kid or somebody that's questioning things, living in a small town in a rural environment, feeling very, very alone and, you know, very, very private in their thoughts, I'm sure it could feel quite lonely. But if they hear a story on public radio, maybe they don't feel so alone and they can connect. And I'm sure your organization is all about that too. Do you hear from a lot of people that you help and people that come to Pride that, you know, I just feel this sense of community and belonging here and that's not something I get in my hometown?
Absolutely. There are definitely people from our rural areas that come to Pride. One of my favorite things to see every year at Pride is the youth who pick up a Pride flag, and we have many different Pride flags. If you want to Google Pride flags, there's Pride flags for every letter under the acronym. But they pick the one that represents them and they just attach it to their shoulders and wear it like a cape. And they run around and just this joy that like comes out of them is one of those things that just makes me so excited or very happy that we have Pride. And the kind of the whole point of it is to come together and find community and find that sense of belonging that you really might not experience or feel in a more rural area or any, I mean, even in urban area, if you're living in a neighborhood or a family that isn't affirming or doesn't acknowledge that part of who you are, being in a space where other people love you as you are is absolutely the whole point of Pride, is to find those people and feel like you belong somewhere because you do. This is one of the other things that's amusing to me about the Pride flags. If you iron your Pride flag, I don't know if you're doing it right. They need to be like completely folded and wrinkled. I feel like that's just like the queer experience. Like your Pride flag. I have a friend who told me that he ironed his Pride flag this year. And I was like, who are you? That's not my experience of Pride flags. But we definitely have rural people. And when I was on the board several years ago, when I first started, we had a gentleman that was in a rural community that would send the board letters and say, hey, can you, I don't have email, I don't have internet, can you mail me the events that you're organizing so that I can come? So it's, people are looking for connection. And I find it's our responsibility as a board to try to do our best to provide those kinds of opportunities for people to come together and meet face to face and find your family.
If you're just joining us, welcome. You are listening to Main Street on Member Supported Prairie Public. We're talking with Jay Stewart and Aaron Pringle, president and past president, respectively, of Dakota Outright, the organization behind this weekend's Capital City Pride, which gets underway in Bismarck tomorrow and runs through Sunday. So a part of making that connection and finding that community for a lot of people in rural areas like North Dakota is and has always been the church. And I see that you have an interfaith service on Sunday. And it got me to thinking about something recently that happened in my extended family. A very wonderful person passed away, and we went to his funeral. And he, you know, is an outed gay man, out and proud gay man who had a husband, and his husband passed away a few years ago. The story was he was a minister, and he was outed and then defrocked. But he never, despite that rejection, he never lost his faith. He still went to church all the time. So describe how important, despite perhaps rejection by a number of people that you probably interact and talk to, maybe yourselves, despite that, faith is still a very kind of Midwest queer value.
So first and foremost, it's so great to see how many people from the church community, and not even just like the church community, and I say church like Christian church, but from just the interfaith community as a whole. So for me, and relation to your family member that has passed, is when I came out 25 years ago, however long it's been now, because I came out when I joined the military. I did the military basic and AIT, and I came home and I was like, whoa, you know, this is Afghanistan and Iraq war and I can go at any time. So I came home and I said, hey, you know, it's time to tell you the truth. And when I came out, my church just said, no, thank you. You are a sin, you are an abomination. And they stopped talking to me like immediately that Sunday that happened, except for one family. And those, like Aaron said, you get to find your family. And those are my chosen family. Still to this day, they are my life. That is my church family. Unfortunately for me, I guess if you want to say it this way, is unlike your family member, I chose not to honor and to continue my faith in church. As a kid, I was very deep in faith. It actually turned and made me not want to be any part of that. I'm still empowered and still love to see all of the church-based stuff that come to the Pride events, that come to any of the events that we have, that we still have that connection with. I want to name drop one of them is like Lou, and have that with her church and the interfaith persons and the Buddhists that are in town and the Muslims that are in town, and still have that connection now and bring this interfaith circle to know that you're welcome and loved. And again, I'm coming from a small town in rural North Dakota. And I find it empowering for any of the small kids from the rural, any of the outlier area of faith, that they can look to it and say that I can still go to church. I can still be a person of faith and know that I can still live my true life as a queer person, as a bisexual, as a lesbian, whomever, and still be able to go to church on Sundays, Wednesdays, and have that interfaith, however that might be, and still have allies that are behind me and support me.
Tell us about this interfaith service that you have on Sunday. Where and when and what's going to happen?
So the interfaith service is going to be down at the Kennedy Center, which is down on Divide here in Bismarck, for those that don't know. The interfaith is going to start at 1 p.m. and it's going to run for about an hour. Each segment that they have is going to be about 5 minutes to 7 minutes. And from there, after that, it's going to be a community potluck from 2 to 4.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jay Stewart and Aaron Pringle of Dakota Outright, organizers of this weekend's Pride festivities in Bismarck, North Dakota. So Pride, here it comes, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Bismarck. Yes. Pride is a lot of things, of course, but it's mainly colorful, flavorful, and fun. So you kick things off with a mixer tomorrow. Give us the details on that, and then the big event on the Capitol grounds Saturday.
You know, we used to get together and have once a month meetings of some type, may it be for the youth, which was known as Q Space. Maybe they did a game night for adults, and they at one point they used to do bingo. I was like, well, you know, well, we could do bingo So then, well, with bingo, what could we do with bingo? I was like, well, we could do a prop station, or Madison said prop station. And I was like, well, I love plants. She loves plants. And already, I think a week after talking about it, we already had 80 propagations ready to go. So it's going to be like a propagation bingo where you have a bring a prop, take a prop while you're here. You know, we can do bingo. You get to win higher tiered plants. So I'm donating one of my monsteras that is, you know, it's a bigger monstera. I don't know if you know what that is, but she's a bigger one.
And, describe a monstera. No, I don't know what that is.
It's like a jungly plant. If you were to look it up real quick, you'll see, and you're going to be like, oh, they use a lot of it in graphic when they're talking about plants.
Oh, okay.
It's like it has like holes and stuff in it, right?
I could talk
basically
to you about plants all day.
Yeah, let's give you a gardening show there, Jay.
Right? Believe me.
So the people who go to Propagation Bingo, if they get the privilege of shouting bingo, one of their prizes would be one of these plant propagations. We also have at 7:30, East Coast Swing Dance is being taught. Wow. So that'll be for about a half an hour. And Jade, remind me, is it Northern Plains Dance?
Correct.
We'll have two rounds of it. So one at 6:15, we'll break at 7:30 for the East Coast Swing Dance training or classes. And then 8:15, we'll do another bingo. The whole time there, we'll have some special alcohol-free cocktails.
Yeah, some mocktails,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing I want to mention about Friday is that Stoneholm, one of the restaurants in Bismarck, also reached out to us, and they are going to host a Pride event also on June 12th, Friday, June 12th. That starts at 9 o'clock. They're going to have music from the Geffro Brothers. They're also going to have a signature drink, and then they're going to host a 50-50 raffle. So with a 50-50 raffle, you donate, and whoever wins gets 50% of the proceeds, and the other 50% will go back to Dakota Outright to fund the projects and programs that will run. And then they will also offer free appetizers until 10 p.m. So as Stoneholm has kind of stepped up to be kind of a fun partner for our Capital Pride kickoff.
And so, yeah, then moving along to the Capitol Ground Saturday, kicking off at 10 a.m. What is happening?
Well, it's an early day. So Capitol Grounds 10 to 4 is going to be our vendor show here on the Capitol Grounds. Since we were talking about rooted and resilient and together, again, plugging this year's theme, we want to be out and we want to be proud of who we are as a community.
Well, you know, this sounds like it's a lot of fun. Pride's always a lot of fun. But, you know, I was looking not too long ago at the website for the ACLU, and they said Pride is protest still. Do you,
yes.
I mean, you're obviously the Capitol Grounds has a lot of space. That's one thing you could do there, stretch out and have a lot of people. But I imagine there's some symbolism there. Do you all see Pride 2026 in the state capital, North Dakota, as a protest?
I would say yes, I do. Mostly because Pride was the result of the Stonewall riots in 1969. And from that came the first Pride, which was a march, basically protesting police targeting LGBTQ bars specifically, and that they wanted to be, the people there wanted to live their lives without the tyranny of the police. We've come a long way since then, but we're dealing with a political climate right now that is basically targeting and bullying members of our community. And more now than ever, we need to show solidarity with those folks. We need to let our legislators know that we are in your community. We exist here. Several years we've had to deal with, or I guess respond to, some very harmful and negative bills, at least harmful in for our community. And every year we go, we bring people to testify and explain our lived situations and how these bills will impact our lives, and it falls on deaf ears. And this, having Pride for me at the Capitol, is a way to remind not only our legislators, but our own community that we are here, we're important, we do have a voice, that it's important to remember where we came from, we have had a lot of progress. Some hearts have been changed, some minds have been changed, but there's still a long way to go to have any kind of equity. So for me, having the Pride, main Pride celebration at the Capitol is not only a celebration, but to me, it's a reminder that we need to come together to really start addressing some of the harmful things that are happening at the state legislature, because it's not going to stop. We need to be able to have these moments to relax and be with each other and celebrate and have fun and laugh, but also know that we need to rest up for the battles ahead, because they're relentless. Change only happens when people step up and enforce it. Sitting back and letting and expecting things to go our way is never going to happen. We need to work together to make change.
Yep. Revel in the hope and joy, and then gear up for the fight.
Yep, right. Exactly.
Yeah. My husband and I, along with a whole slew of other people, we went and we testified when they tried saying, hey, we need to overturn, you know, marriage equality. My husband and I, we got married before DOMA came down, the Defense Against Marriage Act. For those that don't know, we got married before that. And we'll be married, of course, hopefully, you know, until the end of time, and that it would be a federal thing. So we're here to fight. Dakota Outright is here to fight. Volunteers that make Dakota Outright who it is. It's not just, you know, Aaron, it's not just myself. It's not just the board members. It's the volunteers. It's the people that come to be on the board. It's people that bring ultimately their own experiences from where they come from. We talk about pride, the people that have pride in Beach, North Dakota, in Botno, North Dakota, these small towns that still have their own pride. It's to show the symbolism of who they are as themselves, because their table is full of people and they have to fight to get to that table and show who they are. It's definitely a political, it's definitely about showing who they are. And it's a fight that, you know, we have to fight every day. It's a lot. And it's all about volunteering, getting people in and having their voice and showing that at the state capital of North Dakota, one of the reddest states in this country, you can still show who you are and just know that there are like-minded individuals. Because I tell you what, when I came back in 2018 to see that there was a pride, that there was drag queens in this state, and I said, what? Especially since there's no gay bars in North Dakota, but yet there are still drag queens doing flips, kicks, and death drops in a Radisson. And now seeing them held at the Bellemuse, maybe they at the front capitals on the Capitol grounds doing drag bar takeovers over at the Scapegoat in Mandan, whatever it might be. It's come a long way, and we will fight. Just like Aaron said, it's not over yet, because, you know, until we get an equal seat at the table, we will have to fight. So pride is definitely a political thing.
Jay, thank you for your service. I should have said that. And
you're welcome.
If you haven't thought about running for office, I think you should know. Capital City Pride is happening all weekend long in our capital city of Bismarck, North Dakota. We've been talking with Jay Stewart and Aaron Pringle of organizers Dakota Outright. Jay and Aaron, where can folks find information? What's the website again?
That would be dakotaoutright.org.
Perfect. Jay and Aaron, thanks for joining us on Main Street. Again, happy Pride, and hope the event is a big success and a lot of fun this weekend.
Hey,
thank
Eric,
you so
thanks
much,
so
much
Eric. For
having
Appreciate
us. It. Perfect. Happy Pride to everyone else, too.
My mama told me when I was young, we are all born superstars. She rolled my hair and put my lipstick on in the glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong in loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up and you'll go far. Listen to me when I say, I'm beautiful in my way, 'cause God makes no mistakes. I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Don't hide it.
Coming up on Main Street, acclaimed Twin Cities singer-songwriter Mason Jennings talks about his Sunday show at Broadway Square in Fargo and a songwriting workshop that he'll hold earlier in the day at the Jasper Hotel. Fellow folk musician Tom Brousseau has the fun conversation. And up next, Heart and Soul Community Cafe marks a decade of tackling food insecurity and helping people in the FM area. I'm Eric Dethridge. Stay close. But right now, let's get a check of some news. So, hey, I'm Eric Etheridge. We're coming to you from First Presbyterian Church in downtown Fargo, where we are marking the 10th anniversary of Heart and Soul Community Cafe. Joining me is Heart and Soul founder and executive director, Leola Dahl. Leola, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, the excitement is palpable. You got some folks preparing for a meal today, later on this afternoon, so the kitchen is busy. But there's more excitement in the air because of this now decade milestone. So how are you feeling?
You know what? We are feeling very excited and grateful that we're celebrating 10 years. When you start a nonprofit and a business, you never know if you're going to be around that long. We intentionally took things slow because our motto was we wanted to be around for a long time. So we're very excited and grateful for the community and their support.
Well, you know, and for the community that you serve, it's nice to, you know, just like a grocery store or anything that you go to that's consistently there. I'm sure that folks that you have helped have told you, hey, I'm glad you're here all the time. I can count on you.
Yeah, we try to have a consistent schedule where people know where we're at. But we hear lots of times, thank you for helping me feed my family. Thanks for being here today. I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't have been here. I haven't eaten in 2 days. And so that's, you know, really, you know, it's hard to put words to it, but we're able to serve community that way because we have the support of the community that with donations and grants.
So. Well, it's hard to think when you mention families. I mean, when we think of people that are hungry in a setting like downtown Fargo, for example, or any sort of city setting, you think of individuals that are having a hard time dealing with addiction, mental health issues and challenges, unhoused situations. It's hard enough to think about that, but when you add the visual picture of families and kids, describe that and what it feels down deep to be serving that constituency.
You know, we serve a lot of individuals that they're working, they're trying to make a better life for themselves and their families, and if we can help in a small way, it makes us feel, you know, we're honored and grateful that our community trusts us and come and eats with us. But I do say it, you know, we can provide the good food, but it takes a community to provide for everybody in the community so everybody's doing well.
And it really is good food. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, when you talk about children, you're talking about nourishing minds here. That's literally part of what you were doing. Describe the kind of food that you're serving and where and who you get it from.
Sure. You know, we try to serve local fresh food whenever possible, and our chef Joe is amazing with flavors, and so we serve, you might have something like a sloppy Joe and sides, and then we always serve dessert. We also have served chicken curry, tater tot hot dish. We kind of look what's available locally, but typically all of our meals have a side salad with them or coleslaw, something that's hearty and healthy and gonna stay with the person. And we always have a vegetarian option whenever possible as well, but get a lot of our food from one of our wonderful partners is Sandhills Farms, and she has beef, and so we get a lot of our beef from Deb. And then we partner with local farmers. So we've got a gentleman in Grand Forks, I believe, Mant Farms, where we get a lot of our greens from. And then the local, especially right now, we're getting asparagus from Verna Craigness and her team. But you know, we can't do it without the local farmers. And you know, some of the farmers are able to donate. Some of the farmers, we do pay something for the food as well. And we're okay with that because we know they're trying to make a living as well. But the main thing is getting that fresh food out to the community.
Now, you are a nonprofit, 501c3.
Correct, yeah.
And as you mentioned, you know, you got to pay for things. You know, it's not just donations and volunteer hours.
Right.
So how do you do that? I know you had a big grant from
Giving Hearts.
We
not
did.
Not that long ago. So, that,
yes.
So you've been in business now 10 years.
Yes.
So how does the economics of Heart and Soul kind of work?
Great question. So we rely on grants and donations. So with Heart and Soul, it's a pay what you can afford. So we have guests that come in and pay what they can. They volunteer with us. Some of our guests will pay what you would typically pay for supper or pay it forward. And so that helps us keep serving our community. And you know, I say everybody's there for a different reason. Some of our guests are there because they're in need of a meal. Some of our guests are there because they want those positive social connections. Some of our guests are there to help a neighbor in need. As you talked about, you need food to be healthy and nourished, but you also need those social connections for overall well-being. And so we try to do have both of that at Heart and Soul.
You're just joining us. We are at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Fargo, talking to Leola Dahl, celebrating 10 years of Heart and Soul Community Cafe. 10 years. So take us back, rewind, Leola, to the beginning. How did this all start?
You know, it started back in 2013. I had seen the idea in a magazine, and I'm from Fargo, and my life experiences, my work experiences, I knew Fargo was a very generous community, but I also knew there was individuals that were in need of a meal. And so I'd seen an idea in a magazine where they had a pay what you can afford community cafe. And so started going to some different summits with One World Everybody Eats. And Heart and Soul is a member of One World Everybody Eats. Started doing that. Then in 2016, I joined a co-starters group, and they gave us a challenge of trying your business idea or trying your idea. And so at that time, I'd gone to a chef's association. I met Tracy Volvotny. And at the time, she owned Joyce's Corner Cafe. And we were looking for underutilized kitchens to pop up in. And she's like, I have a location for you. And they weren't open on Sundays. And so that's where we started out. And then Casey from Square One Kitchens reached out. And so we had big plans for 2020. We were using underutilized kitchens in faith communities, Square One, Josie's Corner Cafe. And then COVID happened. And then the board and I discussed, you know, really what we do is that community piece too, and we had the opportunity to purchase a food trailer. And that's something we never thought we would do, but it was really the best thing that we did, because then we could go and meet people where they're at. We had done a community assessment back in 2017, and transportation is lots of times the reason that people can't get to a hearty, healthy meal. And so then we started the food trailer. A kind individual, anonymous donor helped us pay for that. And so, I mean, when I say it, community cafe, it really is a community cafe. I mean, so many people have helped us to get to 10 years. It's volunteers that were here when we first started, and now we have a whole nother group of volunteers, businesses, donations, and so that's how we're able to keep going. But
yeah, you have world-class chefs. You have the NDSU dietetics program, I think, helped out
on the first. Yes, and then it all came together. Yes, our first cooks were NDSU dietitians, and so yeah, it just was a dream come true when we had that first one, and just kept it going with volunteers and local farmers joined in. And so it's really quite humbling and amazing, and just to have people believe in what you're doing and have them support you.
And the community cafe, sometimes it's here in First Presbyterian Church, but it's also the mobile community cafe,
right?
The food truck, where you go out to neighborhoods where there are some real needs. Can you kind of describe the community cafe on wheels?
Sure. And so 2019, First Presbyterian Church reached out and were generous enough. We used their kitchen space to do the prepping. We have storage. We have an office space here now. And so with the mobile cafe, we move around to different neighborhoods, and we partner with other community nonprofits or businesses. So we work with our community partners to determine where we're going to go. Some of the places we go to the neighborhood church up in North Fargo. Milkmaid has been a partner of ours since we started, and they're currently closed, but we use their location to bring our food truck. This year we're excited. We're going to be back over in Moorhead at the new library, and We also partner with Olivet Lutheran Church, and they have a food pantry when we're serving our meal. And so really being on wheels has given us the opportunity to move around. We also do lunches with businesses, and that helps us also. The cost of those meals are typically pay it forward meals. So then that helps us cover the cost of meals where we don't receive a lot of pay it forward meals.
So over the course of 10 years, Leola, you mentioned COVID, obviously that was a very challenging time. Mm-hmm. Sure, there's been ebb and flows in the amount of people who are hungry and need mm-hmm. something to eat, and you help them with that. Has this year been particularly hard? Have you noticed any big difference with this year? We read about inflation and the mm-hmm. economics of the world right now.
We have noticed an increase in the number of guests coming to join us for a meal. And so, we're wondering if it has to do with everything going on in the world. But either way, we're here to serve a meal, but we are noticing an increase in numbers.
So what's on the menu tonight? You're opening up the church tonight?
Well, tonight we're actually getting ready. We're going to go over to, on 23rd Street, a Milkmaid in the McCormick Park neighborhood.
Right.
Yep, and we'll be serving, I think he has tater tot hot dish.
What's the favorite item that people are like, hey, when's this going to be on the menu again?
Oh, it kind of changes every year. Tater tot hot dish is popular. We have a sweet potato burrito, and then we also have your beef and bean burrito. Those are very popular. Our sloppy joes are popular, and then something that's really popular as well is our harvest bowl. So Chef Joe takes and puts down, starts with a grain, and then he makes homemade hummus with white beans that are local from Moorhead. And then he has fresh greens, and then whatever veggies are available, he roasts some of those veggies, pickles some of those veggies, and then that goes all together with some tahini on top.
Oh, that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
That sounds like stuff I eat.
It's so refreshing and filling. And so we do, this time of the year, have that quite a bit as well.
So if people want to help out, you mentioned it's pay as you go, pay what you can. For those that want to pay it forward and maybe offset the cost for those that don't have the means right now, how can they do that? How can they assist with those hard costs?
Yeah, what you can do, there's a few different things. Volunteer with us, because those help us cover costs. You can see we have 5 or 6 volunteers in there right now helping us prepare
That's
the
a busy
meal.
Kitchen, yes.
It's a busy kitchen. And then we have, we do have a sustaining donor program where you can go online and donate monthly and become part of the Heart and Soul family. And then we keep you updated on what's going on and have different activities throughout the year.
You got Heart and Soul swag?
Yes, and you get Heart and Soul swag then too. And we also partner with Shirts from Fargo. So you can order a shirt and part of the funds from the shirt go to Heart and Soul. And then, just come and eat with us and support us. And that's one of the best ways to be a part of what we're doing.
Well, if you're in Fargo, you can also support Heart and Soul Community Cafe by coming out to your 10-year anniversary party on Friday. Tell us on that.
Yes, we are very excited. We'll be here at First Presbyterian Church. We are bringing the food truck over, and we're excited to have the Fargo Moorhead West Fargo Chamber will be coming. We'll be doing a ribbon cutting. And then we will also have a guitar player. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to have one of our guest chefs is coming back, Lena, and she's making a Korean beef bowl. Because I forgot to mention, lots of times we have guest chefs as well. And so then people can share their talents with us, and we support them and buy all the groceries, and then they make what they're going to make. So she's coming back, and we'll have Heart and Soul cupcakes as well. And then Joel will have the harvest bowl and a sloppy Joel.
All the people you interact with over the years, can you think of one interaction that just sticks with you now that just really just comes to mind?
Yeah, there's so many, but one thing that sticks with me is we used to have a mom and her kids come and join us every day. And then one day she left us, and she was always, thank you, and she left us a note. And the note said, thank you for helping me feed my family over the summer. I don't know what I would have done without you. Your food is so good, and just, I always felt so welcomed. And when you hear things like that, it's kind of like, okay, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, but that really has always stuck with me. Yeah.
10 years helping people in need in the Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo area. Heart and Soul Community Cafe celebrating 10 years. Leola, thank you. Congratulations on this milestone.
Thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate it.
Hey,
There's a lot of great things happening in North Dakota this weekend, and one of them we'll get a little taste of coming up as the Great American Folk Show's Tom Brousseau speaks with acclaimed singer-songwriter Mason Jennings. Stay tuned. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Nodak Insurance Company, serving North Dakota for over 75 years, providing insurance products from auto, home, farm, and business. Details at nodakins.com.
1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, Jesus, I love you, and I love Buddha too. Rama, Krishna, Guru, Dev, Tao Te Ching, and Muhammad. Why do some people say that there is just one way to love you, God, and come to you? We are all a part of you. You are unnameable, you are unknowable. All we have is metaphor, that's what time and space are for. It's the universe you thought, you are and you are not. You are many, you are one, ever ending just begun, alright.
Welcome to the show. Great to have you here, Mason. I first remembered hearing your music when I was living in Los Angeles, where I lived for a number of years. And I suppose, being from North Dakota myself, I paid special attention to artists with Great Plains roots. And you cut your teeth in the Twin Cities. I'm wondering, what were some of those early days like for you when you were first starting out?
It was pretty amazing, actually. I mean, Minnesota is a great place to get started with music. There's so much different kind of music. I mean, I was influenced really heavily by bands like the Jayhawks and the Replacements. And then starting out, a lot of those bands were really supportive. Like Dave Perner from Soul Asylum sat in with me at one of my first shows, and we played songs together, which got me a lot of press and allowed me to get a weekly gig at the 400 Bar, which was a big, you know, rock club. So I got a weekly gig there and just started, you know, back then it was putting up flyers everywhere and just, you know, trying to get people to come out to the shows before the internet to hear my music. And it really just was a great community that really supported what I did.
Right. You talk about pre-internet, pre-cell phone. You're out there doing everything yourself, making your own flyers, really trying to self-promote your own thing. Is that something that you think that artists just have to do, or they learn to do from other artists?
I think I had a really good mentor, this guy, Tom Sullivan, who ran the 400 Bar. We played there the first time, and like 40 people came, and I was so excited. And he, after the show, he goes, "Hey man, this is a job, you know, like 40 people isn't enough people. Like next week we need there to be 80 people. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was really harsh. He's like, "You better get out there every single day you're not on stage and be working your job to like get people to hear about the music. Like this isn't just like a pastime if you care about the music." So he really kind of kicked it into gear for me thinking of it more of like a job, you know. But I mean, the creative part is never feels like a job, but that there is that part of it. Because I have plenty of friends that are great at the creative part that never wanted to put in the time to the groundwork to get their career up and going.
Right. They relied on somebody else to do it, or they just didn't do it. evolve.
Right.
Has it been a while since you've been into North Dakota to perform?
I usually play there every year. I think I played there last summer, which was fun, and I try to get up there once a year, being so close to the Twin Cities where I'm based out of. So I love Fargo.
If I have my way, I'm never gonna leave Lemon Grove Avenue, where the summer breeze.
You'll be at the Jasper Hotel on the 14th at 3, and then Broadway Square same day at 7, so it's kind of a double header for you.
Yeah, the earlier show is actually a songwriting workshop, so that's going to be fun. I'll just talk for about an hour and a half about my process and take questions and talk to people that are interested in songwriting. Yeah, I love it. I think it's for me, it's forever fascinating. It's a mysterious process, so I really like talking about it.
Do you think that you learn a little something new each time that you try to teach songwriting?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's sort of like the questions people ask, or how, you know, seeing it through their eyes definitely opens it up differently to me.
While the world was busy burning,
We're visiting with Mason Jennings. Mason, you regularly release albums. 2025, your 20th album, Magnifier, was recorded with Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. And you have to admit, being in music gets you in touch with some pretty interesting people. Gossard is a friend of yours. You've worked with him before. What special things does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I think he's fantastic. I mean, I've loved Pearl Jam since I was a teenager, and we've worked together for over 10 years now. We're in a band called Painted Shield. We have 3 records out where I play guitar. I mean, I sing and he plays guitar. He's a guitarist. You know, he really elevates. He doesn't put up with, like, things that don't feel finished. You know, he's very much about, like, professional sounding recordings. And also, he's very literate. This is a guy that reads, like, 10 books a week. And so he's really in touch with lyrics, which is interesting because he's a guitar player mostly. But he's a very smart guy that pays a lot of attention to lyrics. So he's been a really great partner for me.
Building castles in the air.
Right, I would imagine that, because he's such a thoughtful guitar player that he would need to know a thing or two about lyrics as well. It reminds me of other partnerships, like the Gershwins, for example, George and Ira. One knew the piano, one knew the lyric, but they both worked together in order to do it. And I think it also speaks to how we tend to want to just, you know, make our musical heroes monolithic. They only play the guitar, they only play the drums. In your case especially, too, you must do so much more. You yourself must be an avid reader.
Yeah, I'm constantly reading. I feel like, I mean, I'm a high school dropout, not from my own choice, but things were chaotic for me in high school and my family life, so I went to the library every day and just decided that I thought story was the most important thing. So I just read, you know, through the classics and just spent all my time reading. And that's really helped me as far as, you know, compositionally and how to tell a story through music. And I also play all the instruments. Like on my first record, I played, you know, all the drums, bass, guitar, and vocals. So I like to pay attention to all the different parts.
Did you have any formal training in any particular instrument?
No, not really. I had a younger brother who was a kind of a guitar prodigy. So he took lessons and then he would teach me at home. So I got that. But my whole family is really interested in composition. Like my dad and his sisters are very interested in writing and, you know, went through all the college route for English literature. So they were very instrumental in just teaching me about composition in general. But the instrument stuff, I mostly just first being around my brother and feeling my way through it, and then later as I got to hire different musicians, I just tried to hire the best players and then just ask them tons of questions. And just being in the proximity of these players really taught me a ton about drums and bass and piano and stuff like that.
As you were intimating before, at a certain point you have to just, you know, make up your mind that you're going to do it, whether it's learning the instrument, whether it's getting out to self-promote yourself. You have to have that diligence and that discipline to get out and do it.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time. You got to put a lot of time into it and whatever you're doing.
We are on the phone with Mason Jennings, and he'll be in Fargo June 14th. It's a Sunday. You're playing a couple of different times, doing a songwriting workshop at the Jasper Hotel at 3 p.m., and then Broadway Square out front and center at 7 p.m.
And let good things happen. Let the future come.
Mason, really lovely to finally get you on the phone. I've been a fan of your music for a long time, all your records. You've released so many of them. And I was so excited when you dropped your new single. It's called Say Goodbye to the Ground on Loose Groove Records. And it's about doing something without fear. I think that's a hard lesson in life, something that we all need to do, learn how to do. And it's definitely not easy to do.
I believe. Loving is the answer.
But this must be a part of a new album, and surely our listeners will want to know all about it. So what do you have cooking?
Well, I made a new record. It's coming out on July 10th. It's called Dark Wings, and it's an interesting record because I just made Magnifier last year. But during that process, a friend of mine, his name is Scott McPherson, he's a drummer and producer. He's worked with, you know, Elliott Smith and Beck and Crowded House and different bands over the years. And he mostly works these days in making, he's a drummer, but he also makes drummer bags, like bags for sticks, like high-end, like leather bags, and out of the studio space he has in Minneapolis. And then he met a guy who had some recording gear that was from Nashville, and they decided, hey, let's put a bunch of recording gear in this cool, you know, bag factory. So they put a bunch of recording gear in there, and they said, hey, Mason, you want to come by and just record a song for fun at this cool space? So I stopped by and recorded the song, and I thought it sounded really good. So every month when I'd come off the road from touring, I'd kind of finish a new song or two and go in there once a month and record a song or two with them. And then Scott would do the production, and I'd just show up with my song. And then after about a year and a half of that, we had a whole record made, and I just thought, wow, this is so cool. It's very collaborative. It's definitely more of a rock record and more of a lot more instrumentation than Magnifier. So I feel like it's an exciting change, and that'll be coming out in July.
Well, I love the fact that you said you've been working on it for over a year and a half, almost like, you know, there's no time, date, no deadline or anything like that. And probably you had some of those songs going while at the same time you were recording Magnifier.
Yep.
Always have a poker in the fire.
Yeah, I'm always creating. I just think it's, you know, some months it'll be, you know, I'll be painting more than playing music, and then some months the songs just start coming in. So I just try to, you know, pay attention.
Be open, pay attention, receive, and have fun. Well, thank you so much, Mason. It was great to have you on the show, and gosh, have a wonderful time here this summer with touring, and we look forward to seeing you in Fargo, North Dakota.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate your thoughtful questions.
If we want to fly, we've got to say goodbye.
All right, thanks to Tom Brousseau for that chat with Mason Jennings. And thank you for listening to Main Street. I'm Eric Dethridge. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Thursday and a great weekend, too.